Hello and welcome to Money Chill Out, the podcast to inspire and feel good about your money. I'm Marika Fino, a woman in my 30s, ex-trader in the city of London, a yoga teacher, and the owner of my financial empowerment business. On this podcast, I want to open up the discussion around money and investments and dive into personal finance management, which can be a great liberator, but also a huge stress factor in our lives. Every other week, I'll be joined by guests for conversation on money, mindset, investment habits, and any best practices they abide by. So join me on this journey as we unpick the complexities of finance and get more comfortable talking about our money. You too can get financial peace of mind, and it starts with empowerment and knowledge. Let's go. Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much.
Welcome to the show. I'm super pleased. So you're a mortgage originator based in the States, in Florida, and you're a vocal advocate for mortgage transparency and consumer empowerment. And that's one of the reasons why you created your YouTube channel on mortgage education. You also have a big community on LinkedIn, and you've been featured in Business Insiders, Yahoo Finance, and other magazines. So can you tell us a bit more about you and why you're in this space?
Yeah, so I've been a mortgage lender for 17 years. And look, nobody grows up wanting to be a mortgage loan officer. I ended up as a mortgage loan officer because I ended up house poor on my first house. And if you're unfamiliar with that term is, it's basically when you buy a house and the lender says, oh, you can totally afford this, but you don't do a budget. You get that first bill and you go, because the bulk of your money every month is going to go to keeping that house payment going, paying utilities and food. At the time, I was a stay-at-home mom with a two-year-old, and I remember almost dropping my son to the curb when I saw the bill. I didn't know anything, right? My husband at the time didn't know anything. It's a tale that we hear all around the world. You know, it's our biggest purchase, but people aren't researching it. So I had to get a job. And by fate, I ended up getting a temporary job in a mortgage office as an office manager. And I saw what the people were doing as loan officers. And I said, number one, I don't want this to happen to more people. And number two, I can do this better. And here we are. Years later, I'm a top 1% mortgage lender, licensed in 48 states, the number one military loan officer in America, meaning I help the most military members. YouTube's growing because people need this education. As you know, that's why you have your podcast.
No, I love it. And as you said, there's a statistic that says people research actually less a mortgage, which is the biggest purchase of your life, than buying a car, or even going on holidays. That's mental.
It's so mental. And it's like, and I wonder if it's because we make it too hard. I would argue that banking institutions traditionally and finance in general, it's overly complicated and it doesn't really need to be. It can be simple.
I love that. So let's do a bit of education. So to start with, can you give us the key elements of a mortgage? So, of course, we're talking about an amount, fixed or floating rates, the duration, so a bit of jargon. What else?
Well, so when you're looking at a mortgage is basically a loan to secure your interest in a house. It's going to vary based on the country that you're in, which is really important. So in America, for instance, our most popular loan product is a 30-year fixed mortgage. What that means is that for the life of the loan, you will have the same principal and interest payment. We do offer adjustable rate mortgages where they may be fixed for a period and then they adjust based on the market. That's very similar to the UK. So there's a variety of loan programs, but the key is going to be number one, in the country that you're in, what is the longest fixed rate you can get? Okay. And I say that because my husband's British. So we've talked all about UK mortgages because we have a property in the UK. And I'm always like, it's mind blowing to me because I'm like, oh my God, why can't you get a longer rate? In the US, we have more options. And, you know, we have the luxury of deciding how much risk we want to take. And with a 30-year, there is less risk than an adjustable rate mortgage for most people.
Yeah, and we've seen the cases like after COVID where sometimes monthly repayment of times three. I mean, it's a big, big impact. Yeah. So, and you often say it's not only about the interest rates. So what else is important? And I guess fees, which again is a bit always blurred, is a big part of it.
I think, you know, it's just as we were talking about before, where people aren't taking time to research mortgage options. They're not researching mortgage lenders. So for instance, some people go, oh, well, I bank at XYZ. I'm sure they'll give me a great deal. They blindly go there. Or their real estate agent says, you should use this lender. They blindly go there. And what I can tell you is that the interest rate, as well as the lender fees, can vary dramatically, like by a percent or more for the same loan program. Everything's the same. They're just trying to make more money, whether it's the rate, the fees that they're charging, or both. So, you know, it's really important to realize you are shopping and you should be shopping. Otherwise, you could be losing a lot of money, a scary amount in many cases.
No, especially 1%, it's not just over 1 year. It's probably over 20, 30. So it's huge, the impact.
It's monumental. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but it's one of those things where people put a lot of trust in financial professionals to do what's right. And unfortunately, it's going to depend on the person's ethics, right? Because people would go, well, how can they do that? You know, it's within the rules. It's up to them if they think that that's what they should be charging or not.
So what do you think people miss most in terms of knowledge?
I think that people fall in love with properties without sitting down to do the math. So, you know, if I'm thinking about where buyers make mistakes, they go to a mortgage lender, they say, what's the max I can get? The max you can get will lead you to being house poor. And look, this is going to vary based on the country, but one thing that I think every borrower should ask is, what is my debt to income? Okay. And the reason that's such an important question is because your debt to income is going to be based on the mortgage payment, you know, your monthly car payment, credit card payment, student loans versus your gross pre-tax income. And if they start saying anything that starts with a five, like 50, 55, 60, you better be doing a budget. And you should be doing a budget anyways. So I think people aren't, I think they fall in love thinking they can do any bill, but they don't sit down and do the budget and buy a house for a payment they're comfortable with.
No, and it's a really good point as well, because we're a bit naive. Like, we don't really know. Someone tells us you can do this, you're allowed to. Of course, it's nice to have a big house, but then, yeah, you stuck with it for such a long time. And as you said, it's part of your needs in terms of expenses. So you can't really cut that. And it's going to be a massive effort on anything else.
Well, and also keep in mind, you know, in the United States, when a lender's looking at gross income, you know, we're not taking into consideration in debt to income state taxes. And depending on where you live in America and what the state and tax bracket you're in, you could have additional taxes of 13%. So if they're max qualifying you, you could end up in a position where your net pay is lower than the payment. And people go, well, doesn't the lender look at that? No, we have guidelines we have to follow. And the guidelines don't look at that.
So we're going to look just after, like, about the customer experience and being really, like, practical on what to look, the process, and so on and so forth. But there's also another statistics which I found shocking about remortgaging, because, as you said, not every country provide, like, long-term rates, 30 years or more. So which means that every time the fixed rate actually ends, you probably need to do a remortgage, like a new mortgage. But actually 95% of people don't do it, which means that they end up having like a floating interest rate, which can be super expensive. So do you think it's because of admin? People just don't want to do the paperwork? Or is it like a lack of empowerment or lack of understanding that actually there are other options way cheaper and way better?
I'm going to argue it's cultural. And here's why. So as I stated earlier, you know, my husband's British, you know, he's from the UK and I'm American. And as soon as Americans see rates drop, our media is covering rates drop, rates drop. You better refi, you better refi. Our media is also selling ad space to companies that do refinances fast, easy, quick. You know, in America, if you're looking at refinancing, we can close them in 15 days. The UK, I've seen that mortgage process as the wife. It is not fast or painless. You know, it doesn't have the same gusto that perhaps we have in the US for refinancing. In the US, you know, and look, does everybody here refinance if rates drop? No. But the ones who don't, it's usually because A, they didn't know rates went down. So that could be what's happening in the UK. Maybe they don't realize there's an opportunity. It could also be that the loan officer is not saying, hey, by the way, your rate adjusts at this point and it's worth checking in to see if I can put you in something lower. So it just doesn't even occur. And then, yeah, it could be the admin. I mean, watching him go through getting loans in the UK, it's a journey. It's like the US 20 years ago. And I'm not hating on the UK. It's a beautiful country. I love it. You know, but as a loan officer, where basically if I can't close fast, if I'm not being competitive, I'll lose clients. That's not what I'm seeing over there. It's a totally different world.
But it's so funny what you say, because anything finance-wise, investments, accounts, even like pension pots and so on, seem to be much quicker, nicer, more efficient in the US. It's always US, then UK. And I'm not even thinking about like the rest of Southern Europe. So yeah, very interesting. So let's talk about customer experience now. So what is the process that you recommend to go through in order to get the best deal? So again, we have the house, the dream. How do you make it work?
Well, so I would argue that before you even find the house, you should be, number one, researching lenders, looking at online reviews, right? Google, Yelp, all of them, they're going to review lenders. You want to look at the individual loan officer, because a lot of times we're focusing on rates and fees, which we should. But you got to make sure the loan officer can actually close the deal, because there's a lot that really don't know how to. So you should be looking for a good loan officer. I would say interview a few. You can interview loan officers. It's okay. You know, ask about rates, ask about fees. You know, the market changes daily. So the key is going to be finding that person who's going to talk to you about it, guide you, and educate you. Then I would say get fully underwritten pre-approval. Now, look, I don't know if you can do this in every country, but in the United States, you can. And what that means is before our buyers are even going shopping, I'm getting all the admin, all the pain out of the way early, you know, and that can be done in 7 to 10 days, a full underwrite. So then when they're writing their offer, they're saying, hey, I'm good. I'm strong. Okay. And then look, I also go through payments. I go through how comfortable you are. I go through, have you done a budget? You want to make sure you're getting that level of service, regardless of what country you are, because the bottom line is you're going to be responsible for that payment. So buying a house or falling in love before you know what that payment would be, the terms and how it would affect your day-to-day life, don't do it. It's not worth it. I've lived it. It's horrible.
And we talked about leverage earlier, and you said it's not because, yeah, you can afford, in theory, that you want it. So how much leverage do you recommend to take? And of course, it's averages and it depends on personal situations, but
there is no number. I mean, and I know it'd be great to be able to say, oh, and like, that's one of the things is we'll see people say, oh, you should put down at least 20%, right? And like UK, especially, like, I don't even think they have 3% down or 0%. I would argue that instead of looking at how much to put down, let's look at the monthly payment you're comfortable with, and let's look at what you qualify and the products available. In some circumstances, putting more down makes sense. However, let's say you're invested in the stock market. Would I recommend liquidating stock and paying capital gains to do a bigger down payment? No. You know, if you want to take some losses, cool. But like, I think people need to think about the tax consequences of their actions, you know, tapping into retirement accounts, all of that has tax consequences. So in many situations, I would go with less down unless they were liquid because I don't want to trigger those taxes. And it depends on where rates are, right? When rates were really low, 21 and 22, I've got a house with a 2.625% on it for 30 years. Yes, I did a cash out refi and took out cash because that's a crazy rate, you know?
Especially for 30 years. Yeah, for sure. I know people, friends in Switzerland, they managed to get for 25 years, 0.85. Insane. So what's you have that offer? What can you negotiate? And I remember when I bought a flat in Lisbon, I actually negotiated the fees that were linked to the early repayments. Probably I'd never use it, but just in case, you never know what can happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a variety of things you can negotiate. So it sounds like in your situation, you were looking at something that had a prepayment penalty. So in the US, we don't have as many loans with a prepayment. But for instance, if you're looking at one that does, you know, could we have a specific product where we negotiate it down? No, I would have to go to a different investor. Okay. However, if you're working with a bank direct and it's a portfolio loan, I'm going to get so in the weeds, you're going to have to stop me. You may be able to do that. The biggest thing that people can negotiate is going to be the lender's fee as well as the interest rate. Okay. And the one thing to keep in mind is that you also want to make sure, and depending on the country you're in, it's very different. In the United States, we rely heavily on real estate agents. You know, we have a buyer's agent and a seller's agent. You can negotiate with the buyer's agent on their commission. Okay. You can negotiate with the seller for the seller's going to help with your closing costs. You can negotiate with the seller on the price. You can negotiate for repairs. So I think that people, you know, it's like I tell my son, I'm like, before you do anything, I want you to fall down a rabbit hole and I want you to learn as much as possible. And then I want you to reach out to experts and have them teach you as much as possible and partner with those experts and you'll save a fortune. Go in blind, fall in love with a house, pick a real estate agent that's open house, call someone on the internet that you know nothing about for your loan. Best of luck.
And in terms of fees, do you have an amount in mind, like a percentage? Or again, it's so dependent on circumstances.
Well, so it's going to vary based on country, but the United States is hyper-regulated. So the way that my pricing works, it's the same percentage regardless of the loan amount or anything else. Okay. And that's all built in. But like, for instance, our fee to do a loan is $1,640. Okay. Some lenders, you know, are like, oh, we charge $2,000. We charge $10,000. It's all over the map. And it's kind of like a carton of eggs, right? You don't need a $10,000 carton of eggs, but if the eggs are a dollar, you might be wondering why. Right. And I think people just have to recognize that it's really going to vary. There's no average. There's no consistency. Companies, even the different loan officers you speak to could have different pricing. No joke. So you really need to do your homework. But, you know, if I said do your homework and it could save you $2,000, $3,000, $5,000, $20,000, you'd probably do your homework.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's so worth it. Yeah. So let's talk about the psychological aspect now of getting a mortgage, because again, that can impact a lot of our decisions. Have you seen people, clients, been impacted by the emotions?
Oh, I mean, it's an emotional roller coaster, right? You know, from the very early stages, sometimes we'll see that people are disqualifying themselves when they shouldn't. You know, if you grew up in a background where maybe you were told you would never own a house, maybe you went through some sort of financial stress, no matter how much money you make, you may feel like it's never going to be enough. So, you know, that's something that I talk about a lot. And I relate to that. You know, it doesn't matter how much I make. It doesn't matter that I know loans inside out. I'm always going to be nervous because of that root, you know, that root cause from you. So that plays in. Also, have you ever heard of the show Bridezilla?
Nope.
Yeah, okay. It's a US classic. Look it up. So basically, it's about how you know, brides, although now they have Groomzilla, we're equal opportunists now, they get crazy around their wedding. You know, it's like the bubbles came in the wrong color package and it's like a catastrophe. We do see that with home buying as well. We see a lot of heightened emotions, which is why I designed my process to try to get as much done as possible up front so that people are calmer throughout, because it's a big deal, right? And it's very easy, especially because of social media, right? And anxiety, to end up in these self loops where you're just imagining the worst thing over and over and over. So doing a lot of this stuff up front can help with the emotional impact down the line, for sure. Huh.
And I think like the most emotional asset class, like when you invest in stocks, I'm not saying there's no emotions for sure. If you see a crash like 30, 40%, a lot of people will freak out. But still, a home is a bit like your identity in some way. So it's even stronger. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And so we were talking about being an expat. So if ever you have a home in a different country to where you actually pay taxes or live remortgaging.
Yeah. So one of the things we had talked about is just because like in banking, especially, you know, we'll see people come from London, other countries, they'll live in the US for a period of years, you know, New York, Miami, and, you know, they buy houses while they're living there, super easy. And the one thing I would suggest is that if you're in the US for work for a period of time and you're buying a home, get a 30-year fixed. Your instinct, especially if you're coming from the UK, is going to be to do a shorter term loan. However, it is much more difficult and more expensive to do a refinance if you are no longer in the country. So I've had people come to me where they bought that house with an adjustable rate mortgage. They're now back in the UK. It's an investment property. So refinancing it is no longer financially viable. So I'd really say, like, if you're in the US, lock down that long term so that you don't have to stress about where you go next in your world.
No, I think it's a really good advice because, again, the world is open, like a lot of people move country and you don't necessarily think about all the consequences of just moving. But yeah. And any other tips or thing that you would want to share?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, one thing that people should consider, especially if they're looking at a mortgage in the United States, is we are very regulated. So we're going to be asking for the same documents regardless of your wealth level. And I bring that up because sometimes, you know, we'll have people where they're like, I could buy this house 27 times over, but you're asking for all this nickel dime stuff. I think that regardless of your wealth level, you need to just understand we're going to ask for a lot of documents. It's not personal. We're just clicking government boxes. And regardless of what country you're in, do a budget before you fall in love with a house, figure out if you qualify, and then find that house that matches that payment. It will lead to so much more success long term.
And it's a long term view that we need to keep in mind because, again, it's not an engagement in a way for a few years. No, no, it's really, yeah, long.
It's a commitment.
So can you share with us two or three of your best achievements with your clients?
That's an interesting question. So I would argue that I don't have isolated achievements. What I focus on more and what brings me a lot of joy is when we meet those people through YouTube who never thought they could own a house, who had the negative self-talk, and we show them the path. You know, the cycle of poverty is something that I want to break. And I think education is how we break it. And anytime we can take someone who thought they would never own a home, show them and their children the path, that's a huge achievement for me. I think that's the biggest achievement I'll ever make, is having impact there.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. Again, so much possibility, so much growth. Yeah.
And that's the thing is that there's a world full of opportunity. And if people can just take all this garbage in their head that they've heard and put it aside and do the homework, they can end up, you know, I had a client a long time ago who just stays with me forever. When she reached out to me, she didn't have a job, she didn't have the money, and she had terrible credit. We said, hey, to get to where you want to go, here's the things to do. 3 years later, she had that house because she did all those steps. That's huge. And that's what people need to know, is that if you work the steps, you will get there, period.
And it's super encouraging and inspiring as well. Yeah. I always end the podcast with the episode with one last question. How is your investment portfolio, if you can share, in terms of asset classes, geography?
It's interesting because my husband and I have very different investment strategies. So my husband is very into cars, and I would argue there are very few people in the world that know more about cars than he does. So he is in the car world. I'm a very conservative investor in that I want to know that if the world goes sideways, I can hide in my investment. I invest in real estate. I don't love rental properties personally, just because I don't like managing renters, but I look for properties that will have long-term appreciation. And I've done, you know, fix and flips over the years. But for where I am in my life right now, I prefer a more hands-off where I'm really just capitalizing on the future. I own a few properties in the luxury category that are continuing to appreciate consistently. And then look, of course, we all have our stocks and all those basics, but I think real estate, it's what I know. And I think that's the trick. I think people need to invest in what they know, you know, better than most other people.
Again, it's reassuring for clients, I guess, that they know you're in that space. Yeah.
Well, and I've been a landlord and I know what that world is. And yeah, it's very helpful to have someone say, hey, here's the things to look out for sure.
Thank you so much, Jennifer, for all of that input. It was super nice to have your experience, to know a bit more about your world and yeah, how you empower people. And again, beautiful mission. So nice. And if ever people want to reach out to you, how can they contact you?
Yeah, of course. YouTube's always great. It has all my contact information. They can follow me on Instagram at Jen Beeston, or they can just, you know, give me a call. But YouTube, Jennifer Beeston, you'll find a wealth of information. And whether you call me or it just helps you, if it helps you, I've done my job. So thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
No, thanks so much. Bye.
Bye.
So that's the end of this episode. I hope you're as enthusiastic as I am. You can find the notes and the key takeaways on my website, mariecafino.com. And if you like this podcast, please subscribe and spread the word. Thank you.